Hello, good evening, and happy 2019. This is the first live episode of Health Matters for this year. Many of us made New Year's resolutions this year to kick off the new year, vowing to become healthier versions of ourselves. Dieting, exercising, and quitting smoking are always resolution chart toppers. So in this show tonight, we will focus on these three topics along with professionals who can give us advice to keep us on track to help meet our goals. I am Dr. Randall Brewer, and I'll be your host tonight. And I'm going to ask our guests to introduce themselves for the folks that we'll have helping us on Health Matters tonight on listener-supported Red River Radio.
Hello, I'm Jared Mitchell, Director of the Tobacco Treatment Clinic at Willis-Knighton Health System.
Welcome back, Jared.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Julie Hartley, registered dietitian, health coach, and fitness expert at Willis-Knighton.
Hi, I'm Libby Burkhalter, and I'm a certified personal trainer and health coach. Have an online coaching business and teach group exercise classes locally.
All right, welcome. So we have diet, we have exercise, we have quitting smoking. What do you know? We have the top three New Year's resolutions represented here tonight. And you can be represented as well. You can call us at 1-800-552-8502 if you'd like to ask a question. Share your New Year's resolution with us. Maybe you've already gotten started and you want to let us know what your plan is and maybe run that by some of the folks here. Again, this is Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio. Our topic, New Year's resolutions with making our health better in 2019. The number for your call is 1-800-552-8502. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer. I'm your host tonight. Mr. Mitchell, let's start with you. You do a lot of counseling with regards to cigarettes and tobacco, and I understand there's a lot of, or at least more than one way to take in tobacco. And so one of the questions that comes up, especially with kids, because they'll see adults smoking or they may see kids dipping or chewing or vaping, but we know the main ingredient that seems to be active in tobacco is nicotine. Are all forms of nicotine habit-forming, or is it addiction?
Yeah, I mean, yes, nicotine is one of the definitely the key components that help one become addicted to what they're doing. But sometimes nicotine gets all the bad rap. As far as cigarettes go, nicotine helps it make more addicting, but it's all the other bad stuff that is really harmful to our bodies. There are some safe forms of nicotine, and these are things that really have been proven to help people quit for good that are not addicting, that get in our system slower. Those are such as things as your nicotine patches and nicotine gum, nicotine lozenges. And that's really the key. That's what makes it really addicting, is how quick something gets into our system. And the cigarette companies, as well as vaping, that gets nicotine in our system super quick through our lungs. And therefore, that's where the problems arise, because we can't, that's hard to break away from something that stimulates us in that quick of a manner.
With regards to nicotine, is it safe for everyone to have nicotine if it's not in a cigarette or in, let's say, a tobacco product? Is nicotine safe by itself, like with nicotine patches or with nicotine gum? Let's say, you know, people with heart disease or diabetes and things along those lines. Is it safe outside of those uses?
Generally, because it's delivered to your system more slowly. Sure, you don't want any heavy, high amounts, but generally most of the patch dosages, as well as gum lozenges, those are safe amounts, even with people with heart issues. So we strongly recommend and utilize those.
And this is Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio. We are talking about New Year's resolutions for 2019. This is our first live show here on Red River Radio for Health Matters this year. So call us if you have questions about stopping smoking, any New Year's resolution related to health. We're willing to take that question on tonight. 1-800-552-8502 is the number that you can call. And if you'd like to tweet us a question, it's at RRR Radio, at RRR Radio. Julie, with regards to diet, what do you, I think I saw around the first or so, there was an article about New Year's resolutions. Why do you think that losing weight's always the number one resolution. Like when they poll people, that's always the number one resolution for New Year's. Is it because we eat too much over the holidays and we feel fat?
Or? Absolutely. That's certainly one reason, because the best time to think about a diet is usually Monday morning if it's not January, but if it's coming up January. And it usually makes people binge during the holidays, knowing that's what my New Year's resolution is going to be, is losing weight. But we're also, you know, one of the fattest countries, and Louisiana is one of the fattest states in, you know, in our country. So it's always at the top of the list. And with so many persistent health issues related to being overweight and obesity, you know, they're always hearing that from their doctor as well. So January is just the perfect time to refocus on their health, to start setting new goals. And that's, you know, usually why it tops the list.
You know, I know a lot of physicians actually listen to this show. And I get feedback. Sometimes it's positive, but I get feedback about, you know, things that we can ask.
Right.
And it's not a comfortable topic. You know, obesity is not one of those things mm-hmm. that is easy to hide, like high blood pressure, or you're not controlling your
sure.
blood sugar. You can sneak in there and sneak out, and mm-hmm. the doctor doesn't really, maybe doesn't know what your blood sugar is that day. But if you have obesity as an issue, you can't hide it. And patients don't always want to talk about it. How would you recommend healthcare providers approach that subject with patients?
Well, certainly addressing it as a health issue, because so many people want to be comfortable with, you know, being the weight they are, because so many Americans are overweight, we think it's normal. And we need to not normalize it anymore. Obesity, even if you're comfortable with your weight, is still a very serious health issue, and one that, you know, has a lot of other complications, like you mentioned, you know, high blood pressure and heart disease and all those things are definitely related to obesity. So really addressing, you know, the patient as specifically with their health concerns is one way we can get around the issue and just make sure that they know, you know, you're caring about them and it's not, you know, just a physical issue.
Yeah, that's a great idea, especially if they're seeing the doctor. They probably have something they're talking about. Like, for example, I may be seeing a patient with pain because that's what I take care of. We're saying, okay, we're talking about your knee pain. How are we going to treat your pain? We're using medications, injections, things like that. Well, maybe weight could be an issue if we can get some of that load off of the knee, or if it's a blood pressure visit or a diabetes visit. Great idea. Let's talk to Kathleen from Pittsburgh, Texas. Kathleen, welcome to Health Matters tonight.
Wondering if you could tell me about celery juice. That seems to be a very popular, I don't know whether it's just a fad, but it is a very popular juice at this time. And if you know the benefits of them, of celery juice, and also when would be the best time to consume it. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Kathleen, thank you so much for that interesting question. Julie, what do you think about celery juice?
Hi, Kathleen. Yeah, I'm a fan of all different kinds of vegetable juice, and certainly there's tends to be fads, you know, going around with maybe beet juice. There's lots of commercials about that and celery juice. Celery does have lots of benefits. One of the benefits of just eating celery is that it actually takes more calories to eat it because it's so fibrous, you know, and to digest it than it actually has itself. But the juice can actually help lower blood pressure, but I don't recommend just, you know, you can't go to McDonald's and eat a sausage biscuit and then juice celery. You know, it's really the whole, we really want to focus on all of the lifestyle changes and dietary changes. So certainly have celery juice, but I would incorporate other things, you know, like kale, like other vegetables as well too. But if you, you know, if you just want to start with celery juice, that's certainly a great option. You can add a little lemon to it, and that would be a great way to start your morning before your morning coffee.
Great question. Celery juice and vegetable juices in general seem to be one of those sort of underemphasized ways of getting those good vitamins and nutrients that we need in vegetables.
And if I could just elaborate a little bit, because I do get this question a lot, V8 juice is really not the same thing as juice that you would make at home in a juicer or a blender. By the time it goes through the processing plant, a lot of the enzymes are not, you know, intact. A lot of the vitamins and minerals, they add sodium to it. So anything that you can do at home is great. But if, you know, if you want to start out and have a V8, the low sodium is the way to go.
All right, let's take our next caller. John, thank you for calling Health Matters tonight.
Hey, hello. How you guys doing?
Doing great.
My question is, there's so many new nutrition plans. I don't like to say diet plans, like keto. How do you know which direction to go with all this stuff that's been thrown at us now?
Julie, what do you think? He mentions keto. First of all, maybe we could back up a little bit. I think he's referring to the ketogenic diet, and that generates ketones, right? So what are ketones, and why does it seem like a good idea to generate ketones in our body through our diets?
So ketones is just another fuel source that, you know, our body can use instead of carbohydrates. And so how they do this with the keto plan, it's kind of another version of the really low carbohydrate diet, where when your body depleted of glucose, it will start to make ketones and burn more of its body fat. Now, you know, there's just different ways to get into ketosis, and sometimes people do it the wrong way. And so, you know, we hear ketosis the keto diet, and a lot in some people's minds that means they're having bacon for breakfast, a burger without a bun for lunch, and maybe another burger with extra bacon for dinner. And so that's not at all a healthy diet, no matter what kind of diet that you're on. So that's a great question. Many people are confused about, well, should I be vegan? Should I be, go paleo? Because they seem like they're really far extreme. But when I counsel people, the main thing I come back to is I really hate to put labels on people's eating plans. You know, to really say a whole foods, plant-based diet, we could go either way. You could do keto being, vegetarian. We have to do it more specifically, but, having more high-fat vegetables like, avocados. But really, maybe we, always come back to plants. We always come back to fruits and vegetables. Those are always the anti-inflammatory. So any kind of diet that's going to promote, lots of processed foods, extra sugars, even if it's a 100-calorie pack of Oreos, it's not really a good diet. We need to always get back to unprocessed foods and, whole foods and mostly plants. But within that, let's say somebody might have trouble with grains. And so maybe I would steer them less away from, other grains than I would somebody that was, I would lean more towards a whole foods, plant-based diet and less animal products. So there's lots of different variations, but if we can get the whole center to be, less processed, less chemical-free, more real foods in their whole foods form, that's where everybody needs to stay. And then we can kind of tweak the other things, around there. But I know keto is a big one, but lots of people are doing it right now the wrong way.
Now, is it safe to buy these canned protein drinks? I see all them all over the place. I think they're for muscle-building people.
Mm-hmm. Usually, I have people look at the ingredient list, and one surefire way to find out if it's good, we say, if you can't read it, don't eat it. And so most of those, to answer your question, are probably not the healthiest forms. Investing in a blender, if this is really, some place where you want to really go, is a great place to start. But the more we can get that foods that don't have a food label on it, the better off we're going to be.
I agree with you. This show is very important. I hope you guys can expand it.
Oh, great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for your advice.
Yeah, John, thank you so much for your feedback, and thank you for calling us tonight.
All right. Good night, guys.
Good night. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. This is Dr. Randall Brewer, and you're listening to Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio. Tonight, our topic, New Year's resolutions. We're talking about dieting, we're talking about exercising, we're talking about stopping smoking, if that is applicable to you. We have Mr. Jared Mitchell. He's the leader of the Tobacco Cessation Program with Willis Knighton. We have Julie Hartley. She's a dietitian with the Willis Knighton Health System. And we have Miss Libby Burkhalter. She's a personal trainer and group exercise specialist and owner of LibFit. Libby, we haven't heard from you yet tonight. Welcome back to Health Matters.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So what's new with exercise trends that you see coming up this year?
Sure. Well, I hope the trend is that someone decides to get moving. That would be the most important trend for your own health and fitness. There's always going to be new fitness trends emerging, where it's high intensity training, kickboxing, bar classes, yoga. All of those modalities of exercise are great, but the most important one is that you move and find joy in movement. Instead of maybe setting so restrictive goals around your fitness, is to just get up and get moving, get off the couch. For those that are really into exercise, setting more specific goals to your training are great. But I want to get and motivate people that are not exercising to start moving. It may be instead of watching TV at night, you take a walk around the block. It can be started in small increments. I mean, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And then as you progress, you're going to feel better. It'll motivate you to get up and move even more. And then you can incorporate strength training and other modalities. But there's lots of choice right now. We have everything that you can think of, from Pilates to yoga to cardio training, strength training, a fusion of workouts. Hybrid workouts are very popular, where they mix maybe cardio intensity training with strength training. Circuit training is very popular. So there's really a workout for everybody. It's finding the one that works best for you and what your body needs.
Sounds like great advice. Let's go ahead and take our next caller. We have Leah from Huntsville. Leah, thank you for calling Health Matters tonight.
Thank you. I'm 72 years old, and a few years ago, my knee arthritis hurt a lot, and I stopped doing Tai Chi. And it really helped, and I bought a CD and worked on it, and it's easy, it's not so hard.
So you had problems with your knee, and you were doing some exercises for that, is that what I understand?
Yeah, and it really helped.
And what kind of exercise did you do?
That's the Tai Chi.
Okay, Tai Chi.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. How are you doing now?
Yeah, I used to hurt so much when I walked downstairs, but it's gone now.
Well, that's great. Thank you for calling us tonight.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, Libby, we've got an experiential amount of information regarding Tai Chi and knee pain. How would Tai Chi potentially help for knee pain?
Well, without knowing specifically what was wrong with her knee, it's hard to address that specifically. But I will say immobility will create stiffness in the joints. So if you have had some joint pain, even people that struggle with arthritis, you know, the thing they want to do is become sedentary because it hurts to move. But it will help the inflammation if you move and keep the joints lubricated. You just need to do the right type of workout. So a gentle workout like Tai Chi, yoga, water exercise, or swimming are all great modalities to help people that have joint issues and still get good exercise and keep their flexibility and mobility.
Is it, in general, a good idea to exercise with the advice or maybe supervision of a healthcare professional to begin the workout if you have a troublesome area like a bad knee or a bad shoulder or a bad hip or something like that?
Oh, definitely. It's always great to get checked out by your doctor. If you have a specific orthopedic issue, definitely see an orthopedic to give you the prescription of exercise that would be best for you. And then you can work with a physical therapist if needed or a personal trainer to address the special needs that you may have.
You know, it's always amazing. I think I saw a picture of a centenarian running a marathon the other day, and you know, there's not a lot of cartilage left in those hips and knees once we get to, you know, be a certain age. How does that happen? How are we able to overcome, you know, the normal aging process and continue to exercise? Because we know physiologically it's possible because these people do it all the time.
Well, I think a lot of that is genetics. If you're predisposed, you have great genetics, you may be able to continue to exercise at higher intensities or more impact long, you know, into your older years, as opposed to people that have maybe joint disease or joint issues. They're going to have more limitations. But if you take care of yourself and, you know, so, I mean, I'm a big fan of exercise, and I've exercised pretty much my whole life. But as I age, I've had to change my modality a little bit so that it's gentler to my body, because I want to be here for the long haul. And instead of always doing high impact exercise, if I cross train, whether I could mix swimming with biking and jogging, that is easier on my body and allows me to continue at a pace that's challenging for my body and keeps me healthy and fit without too much stress on the bones and the joints.
Julie, we talk about inflammation when people start to have problems as they get older, and we hear also about these situations with diets being anti-inflammatory. You know, we didn't used to think about it, at least in medical school. I wasn't taught to talk to a patient about what they were eating when they had problems with inflammation and pain. Is there such a thing as an inflammatory diet?
Yes, and that's considered the standard American diet. Exactly everything that we're eating is pro-inflammatory foods, and so that's why our big push is trying to get back to more anti-inflammatory foods, because that's the great news, is just like, you know, the foods that we eat can harm us, foods that we eat can help us. And even medicinally, we think about food as medicine. So not just eating, you know, just for calories or just for fuel, although we do that, but eating, you know, to know that what the effect it is going to have on our body. And, you know, just amazing results, even more so than the majority of a lot of medications that you have, but none of the side effects. And so most of the anti-inflammatory foods are going to be all of your plant-based foods, and most of the pro-inflammatory foods are going to be, of course, the sugars. You know, that's one of the major inflammatories, and of course that's one of the, you know, biggest source of calories in our diet. And then adulterated oils, which is in a lot of our foods, you know, highly processed oils are in a lot of our foods, a lot of our fast foods, you know, those kinds of things are really hard on the body. And then a lot of we really overconsume animal products. And so especially the way our animals are treated, you know, when you get them at the grocery store and that sort of thing, you know, when our animals aren't treated well, it affects the meat, the eggs, the milk, when they're injected with hormones and pesticides and they eat things that animals shouldn't eat. All of those are considered pro-inflammatory. You know, they start to produce what we call pro-inflammatory cytokines, and when we eat them, we're just going to have those kinds of results. And so, but again, the great news is we can reverse a lot of that just by changing our diet. So much is in our control. I know all of us here have seen people get off medications just by changing their lifestyle. And I know for us, since we don't prescribe medications, that is, you know, one of the exciting things about what we do.
I bet you that older marathon runner was eating correctly as well, and eating less anti-inflammatory foods.
Yeah.
And also, the, you know, one of the issues with inflammation, I believe, is overall calorie consumption creates you know, a pro-inflammatory state with insulin release and things along those lines, all the hormonal effects of just eating excessively.
Well, it's certainly multifactorial. So, you know, not only do we eat way too much, we eat too much of the wrong kinds of foods, and we eat in a very stressful atmosphere. Most of us, you know, now our lifestyles are so busy. We eat on the run. You know, we're not sitting down at a table concentrating on our meal. We're not chewing, which is another problem. Digestive, you know, issues are really on the rise. And a lot of that can be fixed not, you know, by adding more medication, but by slowing down, chewing our food, not eating so much junk, and, you know, all of those things make a big difference. So it's not just necessarily one thing. It's a lot of things combined.
You know, it's been years and years since the fast food chains have, and I'm not going to call them out by name, have changed their menus over time, offering, you know, healthier options. Do we see that that's had any effect on our health in general in terms of the options that people can pick up quickly? Because our, you know, we haven't changed in terms of how fast we're going. We're still working a lot. Our days are still very, very busy. It can be difficult to get to the grocery store and get food and get it home and make it and get Whole Foods. Are the faster options becoming healthier, or are they not? Or is that too broad of a question?
No, I can answer it just, you know, very generally, because I don't have, you know, specifics on that information. But, you know, one quick question, does anybody remember the McLean burger by any chance? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not available because nobody bought it. I think a lot of the restaurants, you know, because typically the people that are going to the fast food restaurants haven't embraced a healthy lifestyle, because that's, you know, once you start to realize that, you know, there's a lot of things that you can't eat there, you start to, you know, make your lifestyle more in tune with, you know, healthy choices. So I think a lot of those choices are on there just for, you know, random people that come in there. But we certainly can, you know, like a baked potato at Wendy's, you know, can be a great choice. But most of the time, people that are going through Wendy's, not getting so many baked potatoes. You know, it's more, you know, of the fast food burgers and stuff. So I don't see that as has really made a dent, you know, in Americans' lifestyle and certainly in the obesity trend.
I mean, I'll tell you personally, what has influenced me is walking up to that cash register and looking at the menu and seeing the calories next to the options, just like they have to put on packages in the grocery store now. You look next to that.
They were forced to do that. They didn't do that.
I know. You see that. I'm like, wow. You know, I mean, I don't know if there's anything I can pick here that I'll, you know, I'll burn in the next 3 days. You know,
it's might make just, you it's crazy. Think twice about ordering it.
and that's why they did it, is you know, to bring more awareness, because a lot of people, you know, that can make them choose, make different choices. When you see a latte is not just $5, it's, you know, 600 calories, you might think, you know, I could drink some water.
Yeah, I think Libby would like to see right next to the calories how many miles you would have to walk.
That would be great visual. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If we could say how many minutes of exercise it would take to burn off that burger and fries or that latte, it might make you think about it a little bit.
A long time.
Probably like 3 or 4 figures per entry there.
Right. Yes.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Brian from Karnak, Texas. Brian, thanks for calling Health Matters tonight.
Not a problem. I'm mainly calling to offer a little bit of hopeful testimony for anybody that's out there trying to lose weight and have trouble doing it their whole lives like I have. I was a 200-pound 10-year-old. I was 320 pounds all through high school. And then by age 25, I had topped off at 500 pounds. And now point I became a father and lost my mother shortly becoming a father, and I looked ahead at my future and I saw myself dead in 5 years if I didn't do something. And I just had to focus and I had to find what was right for me. Everybody's different, everybody's body is different, and so you have to, sometimes it's trial and error. I went through a lot of trial and error with different foods to see how my body responded. But I lost 300 pounds, and without having any surgeries, without killing myself at the gym, and it was just doing a bunch of little things, you know, whether it would be something so small as to cut back a quarter of a portion of what I would normally eat, or when I would go to the store, instead of trying to find a parking spot up front, I would find a spot in the back and just walk the extra distance and trick myself into exercise that way. And so I just wanted to offer that up and let people know that it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you just do the right things and do what's right for your body, you can lose weight and it can happen. You don't have to have surgery. You don't have to have pills. And that's it.
That's awesome. I'd like to say something to him if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Congratulations for taking charge of your health and your body. And I love what you said, because it is just little steps. compounding daily that add up to really big results, and that's exactly what you did. And it doesn't have to be difficult to lose weight. It's a journey, and it's one that we're all on to live a healthy lifestyle. Instead of a diet mentality, it's more of a lifestyle mentality. And I love your story, and I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Yeah.
Well, anytime. Thank you all very much. Continue the good cause.
Hey, well, are you still there? You still there?
Thank you.
Yeah, he must have been off. I was going to ask him what made him, what was that one motivating thing that kind of tipped him in that direction? I know he stated he wanted to, he wanted to live longer. I think that was a motivating thing, but I bet you there was something else there, the reason why he wanted to live longer. And I think that's some of the motivations people have to really, you know, kind of reinforce and tap into and kind of say, hey, you know, what are those overriding motivating factors that encourage them to make whatever goals that they want to achieve?
It's called what's your why? You know, I loved that story too, and it gives so many people hope that we don't have to, you know, throw everything out in the refrigerator or go run a marathon, or, you know, if that's what you want to do, that's great. But, you know, just like Libby said, if you want to change your life, you got to change what you're doing daily. And it's just the small things. We, you know, some people, you know, like to go big, but most of the time we have a funny saying around the fitness and wellness center. People come in January and they say they have 20 pounds to lose, and in February they only have 30 more to go. And it's because that goal is so big. You know, they're like, it's so far out there, they don't really know how to get started. And I love what he did. It's parking, you know, your car in the end of the lot, or it's, you know, just smaller, you know, if you don't want to change exactly what you eat, eat on smaller plates, change, you know, smaller portions. Those small things, that because you're doing them daily, like Libby said, they're compounded, and then they end up having big results, maybe not in 2 weeks, maybe not in 3 weeks, but in two, you know, I forget how long he said it took him to lose that much weight. But by the time you're 6 months into doing those small changes and you've done them daily, those are the things that really make the biggest dent and the biggest impact on your health. Because it's like Libby said, it's a journey, and we can't change everything, you know, just in 21 days, or, you know, just in. And once you reach your New Year's resolution, let's say, you're still not done. You know, we still got more, you know, more things that we can always improve our health on.
Let's go to Ashley from Nacogdoches. Ashley, thank you for calling Health Matters tonight.
Thank you for answering. So I am a college student. I finished my undergrad, and I'm working on my graduate studies to get my master's. And they always said you get freshman 15 from undergrad, but I really didn't realize weight can definitely come on when you're in grad school, because there's a lot more sitting and reading, more intensive studies. So I'm trying to get back into the active lifestyle that I used to have when I was younger, because I used to do sports in high school and was more active in my undergrad because I had extra time. But my question today is primarily food-based, because I want to incorporate more vegetables into my diet, but I'd like to hear a few more funner options that I could use, because salads every day get really repetitious. And I would like to hear some advice about how to spice up the vegetables that I can consume throughout the day.
Great question. Thank you so much. So,
thank you.
Julie, how do we make a healthy diet less boring?
The freshman 15 is definitely out there. It's alive and well, for sure. And it is. You've got a lot of things going on. You know, such big change in your life. You also have hormonal changes that, you know, that add to this. But it's a completely different lifestyle. Most of the time now, you went from maybe having people cook your own meals to now, you know, fending for yourself or you know, whatever college you might be going to, cooking them. How can I ask? How you're getting your vegetables now? Or are you getting them like in a cafeteria, or you're buying them and making them in a dorm or at home or an apartment?
Well, when I was younger and I was working on my undergrad, I used to go to the cafeteria, and things were a lot easier that way. So they had a salad bar, and I enjoy salad bars in cafeteria settings, so I would get those, as well as I had a lot more exercise because I do intramural sports. when I was in my undergrad, but now in my grad school, now that I'm working on my master's degree, I tend to find myself buying a lot more fast food. So I've been getting better into the habit of making things at my home that I'm at right now. So I'll go to the store and go buy produce when I have the time. But you know the busy life of college students. Sometimes we get the convenience of buying a meal just kind of overpowers prepping it at home, which I know is bad, but that happens sometimes.
Right. And so, you know, and you might be experiencing sometimes produce goes bad quickly. And so I really encourage people, you know, to you can buy frozen vegetables. They usually, you know, they're going to last. They're still going to be nutritious. And that way you can, you know, use them at your convenience, too, especially for college students and really anybody, you know, wanting to enjoy a healthy lifestyle to spice up fruits and vegetables. And for the convenience factor, I'm a big fan of smoothies. Because we can get a lot of nutrition in a small volume. It's quick, it's easy, there's zero cooking, and we can take it with us on the go. And so, you know, we can put three, you know, fistfuls of spinach in a blender with some pineapple, maybe some apples, you know, a lemon, all different kinds of things, you know, that you like, that you prefer, and blend them up, and, you know, voila, you've had five servings of fruits and vegetables, you know, already in one meal. So that's a great investment for you know any college student or any busy person trying to do what your goal is, and you will find that you will be able to get a lot of that freshman 15 off. But not just about the weight, you're going to feel better, you're going to be able to focus more at school because now you're getting great nutrition instead of, you know, just fat and calories that you're getting from the fast food.
I might add a little something, Julie. Those were great suggestions. You know, a lot of times I think, too, we think we don't have time to eat healthy, and it's really our mindset and having a plan in place so that you have quick, easy solutions to help you. The smoothie idea is excellent. There's great options there, but they make so many options. Vegetables are already in a bag. All you got to do is pop them in the microwave to steam them. Lots of quick, easy recipes, but if you have a little plan, you might take, you know, one little afternoon, I do this. I cook vegetables ahead of time, and then I eat off of them during the week, so it's super easy to make. Today, I made a vegetable egg white pizza for lunch, and it was delicious. It had a good serving of vegetables on my egg white pizza. I thought I was having pizza, and it was delicious, and I was a happy camper. So there are lots of options. Just ask. You can email me. I know Julie would be glad to help too, if you need some help in that department. But I think having a plan would help you more than anything.
That's a great addition, Libby. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your help. Yeah, I'll definitely utilize those. I've tried to meal prep in the past, and you're right. It definitely is a mindset because I've worked myself through it. Sometimes I'm trying to get out the door so fast that I think, wait, if I just spend an extra 10 minutes, I could make my lunch and leave. As well as I used to do smoothies, and I really enjoyed that with a lot of spinach. Mm-hmm. So I definitely will take your tips. So thank you so much.
Sounds like you just needed more of a reminder than anything else.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley, for calling us tonight. Let's go to David from Minden. David, thank you for calling Health Matters tonight.
Yes, good evening, Dr. Brewer. I have a two-part question for your guest. One is, with an individual trying to stop smoking, is there a physiological addiction to nicotine that has to be augmented with something to replace that addiction? And the second question is, are there any clinical studies or evidence on secondhand smoke and the possible inherent dangers to individuals as well as vaping?
Great questions. Jared, what would you say?
Sure, there's a strong addiction there when one is used to nicotine in their system a lot. What happens to make it so addicting is cigarettes tap into some of our receptors in our brain that are kind of designed to, you know, kind of send out feel good hormones, And the thing what happens when you smoke a lot is you develop a whole lot more of these receptors. So it's kind of unfair for smokers at this time because they have a lot more of those that are craving, that are firing on all cylinders compared to non-smokers. And so yeah, they kind of break away from smoking. It is ideal to have something. It's not 100% necessary, but for most people, they need something like a nicotine patch or nicotine gum and lozenge. We like combination therapy, using both at the same time to kind of transition away from not smoking. So yes, there's a physiological addiction. Now, the good thing about it is over time, when you cut down on smoking and stop, a lot of those extra receptors will kind of go away. Therefore, you're able to tolerate things a whole lot better. And then you'll be able to transition from the patches and gum, because those are not addicting in the manner of like cigarettes are. So yeah, that's a good question. And in regards to secondhand smoke and vaping, yeah, secondhand smoke is definitely bad. A lot of studies have demonstrated that, so it's best to be away from that as much as possible. Vaping, it's not really been proven to help one stop smoking, and so, because it delivers nicotine in the same manner to your lungs, and so people are still kind of addicted, and they end up, from what the research shows, it's just kind of sometimes going back to smoking. The real danger is the younger generation. Now we're kind of getting into that, where that's becoming more popular, and that's a dangerous thing, because I think we're leaning toward them coming to become smokers as well.
Is there evidence to maybe children of smokers that were never smokers themselves, how much time and exposure it takes before that individual might have symptoms of a heavy smoker, or if there's evidence of that at all?
That's a big guessing game. I don't have anything for you as far as concrete in that regards. You can assume that secondhand smoke compared to someone who smokes is going to be likely less harmful, and it take longer to develop symptoms. But I think we've seen a lot of people in their as they age that never smoked before suffer some symptoms from enduring secondhand smoke. So it's just best to kind of avoid that as much as possible.
Okay, thanks for the info.
All right, thanks for your question.
Yeah, David, I'm not a pediatrician, but in medical school we do learn that children who are exposed to smoke at a younger age, they have higher rates of asthma. They have higher rates of respiratory illness, or complications from normal illnesses that a normal child would typically recover from fairly quickly. So there's no good kind of smoke, whether it's primary or secondhand. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer. This is Health Matters Tonight. This is Red River Radio. We are talking about New Year's resolutions, exercise, diet, and cigarette smoking. You can call us at 1-800-552-8502 if you'd like to ask us a question. We've had some really good questions here tonight. You know, going forward, Jared, with the smoking issue, we mentioned nicotine replacement. A lot of people will ask, what about the other drug therapies for stopping smoking? Are the drugs Chantix still recommended? And I know the drug bupropion, Wellbutrin is what it's known as from the trade name standpoint. Are those drugs still recommended and used to assist in stopping smoking?
Sure. Those are great options as well. Of course, the doctor needs to kind of take a look at that and prescribe that. But yeah, those are great options as well, because they act on those same receptors that I talked about before. Chantix kind of blocks those to where cigarette smoking just can't. When you smoke cigarettes, it doesn't affect. You can't activate those receptors, and bupropion kind of stimulates those receptors to where your urges are less. So those are also great medications that help people in that regards. And I also, if people are on those medications, I encourage them to also potentially use a nicotine gum or a nicotine lozenge in addition to those, because research is showing, again, combination therapy way more better than just using one thing alone.
combo therapy.
Yeah.
And so Chantix works by blocking the nicotine receptor. Is that how it works? Because
right.
we hear some people have side effects from Chantix and can't tolerate it. Is that why sometimes it's not tolerated by patients?
Right. So a lot of people do have issues with taking Chantix. So yeah, a lot of people kind of opt not to go that route because sometimes they do have some side effects, such as, very odd dreams. They sometimes just can't tolerate that. Again, some people do perfectly fine on it, but then a lot of people sometimes have some maybe nausea or just issues with that. We do encourage you, if you do take Chantix, make sure and take it with food. And then also, if you can't tolerate the accelerated doses in Chantix, chat with your doctor, or if you're working with a tobacco treatment specialist, we may kind of entertain the thought of just doing a lower dosage if that works well for you.
All right, let's go to our next caller. We have Benny from Alexandria. Benny, thank you for calling Health Matters tonight.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I was just calling because I heard David asking about vaporizers, and I wanted to share a story that I had personally. I used to smoke pipe tobacco, and it started really negatively affecting me. I didn't have as much endurance. I was constantly being short of breath, chest pains, phlegm, the whole nine yards, and I realized that I needed to quit. So I switched from pipe tobacco to a vaporizer, and what I ended up doing was depending on the model of vaporizer you use, you can buy different quantities of nicotine to put in that vaporizer. And I started off at a 15% solution and worked my way back over the period of about a year to 0%, and I stopped smoking altogether this past February, and been smoke free for about a year now.
Awesome. Great job.
So that's basically that was a self prescribed nicotine weaning program.
That's right. And like you said, it was very difficult to stick with it, but my grandmother died of emphysema from smoking, and so that was a huge motivator for me to keep with it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'll ask you one question, but I'll mention one thing first. But yeah, a lot of people who are smokers, they really want to quit. Most of them do. They just don't know how to get there. Don't know where to start. And I'm super glad you did that. I want to know, tell others that are listening kind of what difference has it made? How do you feel? What do you feel better? What have you noticed?
Well, I work a construction job, and it's a very long hours, very active sort of lifestyle, and where very simple tasks used to make me out of breath. They used to make me coughing, wheezing, chest pain, phlegm, the whole nine yards. Whenever I stopped smoking tobacco, my sense of smell came back. Just the all of my old clothes smelled like ash and tar all the time. And there was that sour smell where I would sit and smoke in the chair that I used to sit in. And when you quit, everything clears up. That phlegm breaks loose. I'm able to do my work now without having as much, without having the chest pain, without having the out of breathness. I'm no longer constantly thinking, maybe I can break away here for a smoke break real quick, and maybe I can step out, and it's not as disruptive to my life anymore.
I was glad you mentioned that because I can't help myself. I got to ask you one more question, but a lot of people will say, I've got to smoke because that helps out. That's the only thing I got to help out with stress and anxiety. Have you noticed that your stress and anxiety is less now because you do not smoke?
Yes. When when my work was really hands-on and I would be stuck working on a particular project and we'd be on a timeline, we'd have to get this one particular thing working, and stress way up to the roof, really, really irritable because I'm trying to get this done. I'm thinking, man, I would kill for a smoke right now. I would kill to be able to take 5 minutes and just sit back for a second. And now it's not as bad as it was. It's not as good as it was before, but it's not as bad as it was whenever I was still smoking.
All right, great. That's what we're seeing a lot more, and it's pretty neat to see.
Benny, how long did you smoke for?
I smoked for about 3 years. I was actually diagnosed with Crohn's disease, moderate Crohn's disease, and none of the medications that I was on at the time did anything to help with the stomach cramps. But I found that nicotine helped to temporarily dampen that, so I started smoking after that. And of course, you can't just smoke to help with the stomach cramps. It ends up getting worse and worse and worse. You start using it as an excuse to smoke whenever, and it ended up having more negative effects than the positive ones. I realized that I needed to switch that before it started impacting my health in more ways.
Great job. Few people are able to successfully stop smoking. I think what Jared mentions about how do you deal with stress, because we see that yo-yo phenomenon with smokers very commonly. Not having the cigarette is stressful enough, but then if you add normal life stress to that, it makes it even more likely to just reach for that cigarette just to relieve both the nicotine withdrawal as well as the stress that's going on.
There's one thing that I really love about Benny's answer, and I'm glad Jared, kept asking him those questions, because in the beginning he was just, Benny was, letting us know, the formula that he used. But did you see, hear the excitement in his voice when he started saying, oh, this is my why? That's what we were coming back to all of our resolutions. Why do you want to do this? It's not just about, when we take prescription medicines, maybe to lower our cholesterol and the numbers come down, people don't get that excited. But when they lose weight, they're eating right, it's the energy, the stress level is less, it's all of these different reasons. And we want to find out, what is your why? Why do you want to quit smoking? Why do you need to exercise more? Is it not just physical and not just the health problems, but I want to spend more time with my kids, I want to have the energy to go do hiking with my husband, or all of those different kinds of things. What gets you excited about life, and what gets you motivated to make those changes are really, in my experience, much bigger motivators than just I need to lower my blood pressure numbers. I just loved hearing the excitement in Benny's voice, and I appreciate him sharing his testimony. That's going to be a great witness to other people.
Benny, thank you so much for your call to Health Matters tonight. I'm Dr. Randall Brewer, and this is Health Matters here on listener-supported Red River Radio. Our topic tonight, New Year's resolutions. We're talking about exercise. We're talking about diet and weight loss. We're also talking about smoking cessation. If you would like to ask us a question or offer a comment, 1-800-552-8502, or you can tweet at RRR Radio. Libby, going back to the exercise phenomenon, one of the things I had on my list to ask you about, I guess a few years ago, tracking ourselves in terms of how far we're walking in a day and things along those lines, there are a lot of devices that came on the market fairly suddenly. What's going on with that? Is that still a trend, or has that come and gone?
Well, it's still a big trend. People like seeing results. They like tracking their miles, their steps. It's a great feedback system. It can be a real motivator for some of us that like that. And then at times it can be a deterrent, that you're spending all this time, worrying about getting enough steps or burning enough calories. And sometimes you need to just kind of get away from your cell phone and get away and unplug and just enjoy the joy of moving your body and feeling good and not counting every little calorie, but just choosing healthy lifestyle foods that are like vegetables that, you know, Julie's been talking about. You know, plant-based food is excellent. So I think they can be a great tool in our toolbox to help us get healthy and fit and have fun. People are driven by the feedback. I have a client I train that loves her her watch that gives her all kinds of feedback, and she and her daughter kind of compete with each other on exercise and classes and things like that. So it can be a real positive feedback, or I think it depends on the individual, really.
Yeah, mentioning doing those sorts of things with others, having a partner to help out, the peer support is, I think, a strong thing to have.
It's the accountability that people really need. I probably would say 98% of the clients that train with me are looking for accountability in their fitness and their nutrition, and they need that buddy to help them stay on track, to help them stay motivated and inspired to reach their goals. And to me, that's one of the fun parts of my job, is to help them. And it really comes back to their mindset, is helping people overcome their mind that holds the things, the self-limiting beliefs that hold them back to achieving their goals. A lot of times people just don't believe that they actually can get healthy, get fit, and lose weight for good and make it a lifestyle plan. So helping them believe in themselves is a big part of what I do.
You know, and it's a shame that our healthcare system isn't as set up to treat, you know, these common things proactively, to have, you know, access to personal trainers or access to a dietitian to talk to, or access to a lifestyle coach, like stopping smoking or, you know, other unhealthy habits that we fall into. I mean, it's easier to get, you know, a big heart surgery paid for than it is sometimes a visit to a dietitian. It's crazy, but the system's so set up to treat to put the fires out, so to speak, right now, as opposed to prevention. I mean, we do a good job of childhood prevention, but I think some of these chronic conditions could be, you know, much better prevented if we could access the resources that you guys offer the people that you talk to. Let's talk to Caroline from Shreveport. Caroline, thank you for calling Health Matters tonight.
Yes. I was calling to say that a great way to lose weight is to join a weight loss organization like TOPS, Take Off Pounds Sensibly. It's an organization that's been in existence for 70 years. And you were talking about accountability, and that is one of the features of the TOPS chapters, is the fact that they do have accountability with members that are all struggling with the same issues and making a lifestyle change. And these chapters meet all through Shreveport-Bossier as well as nationwide for the whole country of the United States and Canada. There are chapters, and it's been in existence even longer than Weight Watchers. And it's a fantastic way for people to lose weight and to make a lifestyle change.
Thank you so much for that information, Caroline. Is there a website or a telephone number that you could offer our listeners that might be interested?
Yes, they can get online, and they can type in TOPS, the organization, Take Off Pounds Sensibly, and they can find out the details and where all the chapters meet, and about the national organization, and they can find out all the information. And that's a real asset for people that are wanting to lose weight and make a lifestyle change. Our area coordinator, Vivian Andrews, is in the Essence magazine, and she's lost over 100 pounds while she's been in the TOPS organization.
Well, thank you so much. That's very, very helpful information, and you have just shared that with our listening audience, so we really appreciate your help.
It's all about, in the new year, setting a goal, and, you know, that's what TOPS does. You set a goal, your doctor gives you a goal weight that you're going to try to achieve, and then you work toward achieving that goal in small steps, just like the man that lost over 300 pounds did. noticed he made small changes, and that's what it's about, making small changes that make a big difference. Thank you so much for speaking with me about this matter that so many people are having struggles with.
Well, thank you, Caroline, and we're going to have to close. I would like to thank Jared Mitchell, Libby Burkhalter, and Julie Hartley, all experts in their respective areas that we've talked about tonight. As you know, Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For serious health conditions, you should contact your local physician. The views and opinions expressed on Health Matters may not necessarily reflect those of Red River Radio, its staff, or LSUS. This show will be available for download from redriverradio.org. The producer tonight was Renee Moran. Phone assistance has been provided by Wally Derleth, Sheila Lawrence, and Tim Snell. Support for this program comes from the Noel Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Next Thursday, please join us again for Health Matters. As you know, this is KDAQ 89.9 FM Shreveport, Bossier City, KLSA 90.7 FM Alexandria, Pineville, 90.9 FM KBSA El Dorado, Camden, Magnolia, 88.9 FM KLDN Lufkin, Nacogdoches, and 100.7 FM KTYK Overton, Tyler, Kildare. Thank you all so much for joining us tonight.